A very good morning to everyone. The first case on this morning's call is number 033220, Joseph Sabal against SI Securities Incorporated. Mr. Yen.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, my name is David Yen. I'm here for the debtor, Joseph Sabal. What I'd like to do in the argument is start out with a discussion of why the district court was wrong to impose a 60-day limit on curing the unpaid property taxes on Mr. DeVos' home, and then talk about the issue of whether or not he was an individual who was eligible to file as a person with regular income. And there's another issue, which is whether or not the plan was filed in good faith. On that, I would like to rely on the brief. That was a factual matter. That was bankruptcy court ruled in our favor, so I think I'll just leave that to the brief, if that's all right. In this case, Mr. DeVos was the owner of a condominium. He was delinquent on his property taxes. He was about to lose his home for failure to pay those taxes. He filed a Chapter 13 case in order to save his home. And after proceedings in the bankruptcy court, the bankruptcy court held that the plan in which he proposed to pay back the taxes over a period of, turned out to be about 2 years, was something that was exactly provided for by Chapter 13, and confirmed the plan.
Forgive me. I would like to ask you one question, and it's this. If Mr. DeVos had filed a Chapter 7 case when he was still unemployed, would the redemption period have expired before he could switch to a Chapter 13, or would it have been told?
Your Honor, the redemption period would have been extended for 60 days.
Right.
And he could have switched to Chapter 13 within that 60 days. In fact, he obtained a job approximately 30 days after he filed the case. And that was April 2nd. He could have then filed a motion to convert to Chapter 13, which would have taken about 7 days. So he would have still been under the 60-day limit.
But if he had filed, maybe you can clarify something. I thought the essence of your argument really was that as a matter of Illinois state law, at the time he filed in the bankruptcy court, as it happened under Chapter 13, the tax purchaser still had only a statutory lien, not an actual title interest in the property. Is that correct?
That's correct, Your Honor.
And so why would the redemption, and then I thought from that your argument proceeded that as the holder of a lien, the bankruptcy court had the authority to include repayment of that in the bankruptcy plan.
Yes, that is our argument.
So why does it make a difference if you filed under Chapter 7 or Chapter 13 for purposes of the length of time? Because your opponent says he had 60 days, that's it. Once the 60 days was up, this ripened into full title.
I think the 60 days would only matter if his bankruptcy for some reason failed, whether it was a 7 or a 13.
Okay.
As long as he's in a bankruptcy, the provisions of the relevant chapter of the bankruptcy code determine what happens to the holder of a secured claim. And since the tax purchaser was only the holder of a secured claim, he did not own the property, then it is, as the bankruptcy court found, you can treat their lien pretty much the same as any other lien is treated in any other bankruptcy.
Well, it's a statutory lien. You're not arguing, are you, that the statutory liens are the same as consensual liens?
I am definitely not arguing that they're the same. The crucial difference is that a statutory lien or a judicial lien, unlike a consensual lien on your home, can be modified under any chapter, any of the reorganization chapters, 11, 12, or 13. Congress, in Chapter 13, and I believe Chapter 11, I'm not sure, specifically said that a consensual lien, such as a mortgage, cannot be modified if it's secured by your home and only your home.
Right, that's 1322b2.
Correct.
But you're reading from that the opposite, or the correlative proposition that if you have secured rights other than one of these consensual liens secured by real property that's your principal residence, it can be modified in the bankruptcy.
Yes.
Yeah.
Since it can be modified, the question is whether or not the debtor's plan complies with the various requirements in Chapter 13 for how you can treat a secured claim. And those are you can surrender the property, which Mr. Bell certainly did not want to do, or you can pay the lien the debtor in the plan provides that the creditor retains the lien, and the value of the money that's paid during the life of the plan is equal to the amount of the lien. That is what the plan did. We're saying our installment payments over the course of 2 years will equal the amount that was owed in the taxes plus interest. And therefore, we've met the requirements of Chapter 13 for permissible treatment of a secured claim.
Maybe I should have asked this question first. In what sense is a tax sale a foreclosure sale? In other words, 1322C1 seems to apply only to foreclosure sales.
A tax sale, well, the initial tax sale, when the tax purchaser pays the taxes for the homeowner, we say it's not a sale in any sense. It's of the property. It transfers the lien from the county to the tax purchaser. In the process of eventually, if you don't pay and nothing happens, they will get a deed. Your question is, is 1322C1 limited to foreclosure sales? I would say that if we look at Section 1322C1, a default with respect to or that gave rise to a lien on the debtor's principal residence, so that is any default, any lien, both either consensual or statutory in our case, and it may be cured pursuant to Chapter 13 until the residence is sold at a foreclosure sale. My interpretation is that this process of converting a lien, a tax purchaser's lien, into a deed should be considered a foreclosure process. And if for some reason we were to say that that's not a foreclosure process, it's something else, it's a, you know, converting your lien to a deed process, let's just call it that. If you read the statute literally, it says there hasn't been a foreclosure sale. Therefore, until there's been a foreclosure sale, the debtor can cure that lien.
But what difference does 1322C1 make if you're right about 1322B2, that this is all that the statutory lien isn't a claim secured only by a security interest in real property, given the definitions under the code, and thus it can be modified? Isn't 1322B2 all you need?
Judge, I think that's right. I think 1322B2 is all we need. That's what the bankruptcy court relied on. And I think in this case, at least, 1322C1 is just a bonus. The one thing that is interesting about 1322C1 is that it says, notwithstanding applicable non-bankruptcy law, so that to the extent that there is some concern that perhaps bankruptcy is interfering with state procedures too much, here Congress said, we don't care, we're really, really concerned about saving people's homes. I think in our situation it's unnecessary, and it was really It was motivated, apparently, by something that was happening in New Jersey or Pennsylvania in the Third Circuit, and that it was, there's nothing about our case or Illinois statutory liens that is not covered by 1322b2.
I take it that, I mean, I believe that both of you concede this is an issue of first impression.
Yes.
Okay.
The, not sure. In terms of Section 108B, the district court said that our reading, the reading we proposed of 1322, would make Section 108B superfluous. And that's, with due respect, that's not correct. Section 108B is a general provision that applies to all chapters, both trustees and debtors in possession, and it specifically refers to rights under applicable non-bankruptcy law or non-bankruptcy proceedings. So a cure or modification or a Chapter 13 plan, all of those, if it's done pursuant to a chapter of, in here Chapter 13 or Chapter 11 would be the same. A cure under a provision of the code is not a cure under applicable non-bankruptcy law. These are, they are similar, or no, they're not similar. They could both apply. You could certainly, if the debtor in this case had been able to get money from a friend and pay off the taxes within 60 days, he could have done that. But he did not. I see I'm into my rebuttal time, so thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Yen. We'll hear now from Mr. Moskowitz.
Thank you, Your Honors. My name is Harold Moskowitz. I represent the Appellee SI Securities. And as Your Honor has correctly said, this is a matter of first impression, as well as the one of the other issues in this case, which is whether or not a person who did not have a job or any other income at the time of filing of his bankruptcy under Chapter 13 is entitled to file a bankruptcy under Chapter 13. Or file a bankruptcy and assert that since I could have filed a 7, once I get a job, I'm okay.
Could you answer for me the question that Chief Judge Weedoff was asking, namely, from the point of view of your client, what tangible differences occurred in this case when he could have started with a 7 and converted to a 13 versus starting with a 13 and then getting the job a little later? Is there any specific prejudice you can point to?
Well, before I answer that exact question, I'm going to read Your Honor.
But I've read the transcript. I would love an answer to that question first, actually.
The answer to that is that if someone files a Chapter 7 first, it should not be a lottery whether or not I'm able to become eligible under Chapter 13. And then,
but why does it hurt you? What happened to your client here?
Because in this kind of circumstances, if there would have been a file of Chapter 7 and the trustee would have been appointed, then we would have come in immediately on a motion to lift the automatic stay, because trustees do not usually redeem real estate, and they have no money to redeem real estate. And therefore, we would have filed a motion to lift the automatic stay. The stay would have been lifted, and we would have gone ahead with
our proposal. But what rights specifically did you lose by his filing Chapter 13 initially?
In this particular case or in general, Your Honor?
In this case.
In this case, there was no specific, as it turned out, because he got a job 30 days later, there was no specific right that would have that we lost because of it. We would have lost the opportunity, as I said, that have been a Chapter 7. The issues would have been different.
But you're just speculating that the ruling on your motion to lift the automatic stay might have been different if he had started out with a 7 instead of a 13. Of course, in the event, you came in anyway with a motion to lift the automatic stay, and you almost won. I mean, there was a reconsideration, but it's... So in this case, it really didn't make any difference, given the timing of everything.
Well, in this particular case, it made no difference, but I quote...
And why is the bankruptcy judge then abusing his discretion when he says it hasn't made any difference in this case, so I'm going to regard it as harmless?
Because he had it right when he said on page 3 of the transcript in October that a case is not supposed to be filed by an ineligible debtor and a debtor files the case anyway, the case ought to be dismissed on motion of any party in interest.
But
that is the theory.
But that presupposes that the time for looking at the debtor's ability to satisfy a Chapter 13 plan is the date of filing, not the date at which the plan is approved or any other date one might pick.
I agree, but the rules and the code seems to assert that way, and I draw Your Honor's attention to Section 107 of the Federal Rules of Bankruptcy Procedure, which requires a debtor, in all cases, including a Chapter 13, to file schedules and their plan and any other information that they're required to file within 15 days. According to this process, a debtor would not have to do that. What a debtor could do...
Sure, a debtor would have to file unless there was an extension of time of the 15-day period, and the filing would certainly have to be an honest filing.
But that didn't happen in this particular case.
There were extensions of time, and I know your position is they were obtained in a misleading way by saying, I need information, rather than saying, I need time to get a job. You've made that argument.
Yes, sir.
But that's... But he did get extensions of time.
Yes, he did get an extension of time. But under that process, what the rules should say is that if a Chapter 13 debtor doesn't have a job at the time, he could hang around and not file his plan until such time as he gets his job. But that's not what the code and the rules of civil procedure require. It requires him to file within 15 days.
Right. No, I understand that. But judges do have time to do extensions of time. The trouble with this case, I think that the bankruptcy judge thought this too, is that it has one gets the impression that what you would really like is your vastly oversecured property. You don't really want to be paid the amount of money that you paid to purchase the taxes. You could have asked for a sale and error, for example, if you had really just wanted the money, or you could have said perhaps that the interest rate wasn't enough on the repayment plan. You could have said all sorts of things, but you're not saying any of those things. You're instead saying we want four times the value of what we bought.
That's correct. But I'll point out, Your Honor, we did say the interest rate wasn't.
But you haven't preserved that here.
We haven't. We asserted that we did. We asserted that the problem with Judge Weedoff's opinion in Bates is that it changes state law in many other ways, other than the issue of how long I have to redeem. It changes the interest rate which I'm entitled to obtain under state law, which under bankruptcy law might be something different, which is one of the reasons why we asserted that Judge Weedoff's opinion, which is 1 out of 11, is incorrect.
I'm kind of interested, Mr. Moskovitz,
yes,
in why should tax purchasers get more rights in bankruptcy than mortgage lenders?
They are not giving more rights than mortgage lenders. That is a statement that the appellants have made, but it's not really correct. This court has ruled in Tynan that all state redemption rights are ruled by 108. This is a state redemption right. This is a right to redeem taxes. It is not a right to cure a default.
That's a broad reading of Tynan, actually, but we will deal with Tynan.
I would assert that both Judge Squires and Murray and Judge, I think it was Judge Plunkett and Smith and Judge Ginsburg and Loca and Smith all came to the same conclusion. That
right,
under
but they're
Tynan,
not them on the Court of Appeals.
I understand, Your Honor. They have asserted, and I think they are correct, that under the rule set forth in Tynan, that 108 controls the area. If counsel for Appellant were correct, 108 should have been revised. And 108 should have said that if you have an issue of something under non-bankruptcy law, then you have three opportunities to accomplish that task: within 60 days of the bankruptcy, the actual redemption date, whichever is later, or under 1322B2. It doesn't say that. It only gives 60 days, and it only gives the right of or the actual redemption time.
But of course, it's only addressing non-bankruptcy law issues, and it's not focusing on what kinds of interests state law itself, as an underlying matter, had created at the time.
But that
and the state law creates rather different interests here.
But that's the whole point. Under Butner, the Congress cannot change state law unless...
Congress, nobody's changing state law. In fact, one is taking state law as a given and saying what flows from the rights that state law has created. If state law creates a lien, that's one thing. If state law creates title, that's another thing.
Right, and you seem to think that Congress meant to protect state taxing bodies, but SI Securities is not a state taxing body. The taxing body has already been paid by SI Securities.
I'm not arguing that we're only protecting state taxing bodies. The Illinois State Legislature has passed a law which sets forth what the redemption period has to be in the case of sales, the taxes that have been sold. It is that Illinois law, which has set forth parameters which gives the right to an owner of property to redeem taxes which he has not paid. It is that law that Congress is trying to, at least Appellant is asserting, that Congress changed. If Congress wanted to change that type of law, Congress had to be very specific about it. And that's what Butner requires, because Butner says, and Tynan says the same thing in the mortgage foreclosure, is that to do otherwise would put all such sales, foreclosure sales and state sales of, county sales, I'm sorry, of taxes under this federally created cloud of maybe sometime in the future someone's going to file a bankruptcy petition, which is not the purpose of the bankruptcy code, and unless Congress specifically requires it to be so.
Well, but in what way does Mr. DeBall's argument not conform to really sort of the main purpose of Chapter 13, which is to allow a debtor with regular income to pay off his debts without losing his home?
But 108 says when you have a right under state law, you must comply with that state law or you have an extra 60 days. It doesn't give you carte blanche to extend or change state law on a plan at your whim. It is only every court who has dealt with this issue, other than Judge Weedoff and Bates, has come to the same conclusion. Some have said there's no debtor-creditor relationship. Some have said, like Jackson, that there's no property interest. Others have asserted that 108 controls.
Judge Weedoff is a prophet in his own time.
Maybe he is, but I suggest...
Could you discuss the Third Circuit's decision in Rankin against DeSarno?
In what sense, Your Honor? The fact that the
fact that they found that there was a permissible modification of the county's rights under Section 1322b2.
Well, I suggest, Your Honor, that case, well, you know, one is not pressed in this court, but I also...
Well, but it's a shell. We don't lightly create conflicts with our sister circuits.
I understand, Your Honor. I assert that was a misreading of 1322B and its right to change law.
Bring it up because you're insisting that no other court on the planet has ever done anything like what Mr. DeBall is asking, and it seems to me that the gist of what the Third Circuit did in Rankin is actually quite consistent with what Mr. DeBall is asking.
Well, the problem is, in this particular situation, is that we have a number of courts in this area who have all come to the same conclusion, subject to this court's ultimate decision.
But these are lower courts, and one of our fellow circuits has come to a conclusion that is not.
But I don't know. I don't think Rankin gave specific analysis of the Butner decision and how Butner really requires the Congress to have been very specific in the case and required Congress to be more specific in saying that this applies to state redemption rights as comparing to any other type of
issue. To accept your position, would we have to create a conflict with the Third?
I don't know that this court has to. I think this court can specifically provide that, one, I believe that this court's ruling in Tynan is more than enough authority for the proposition that 1322 doesn't apply. I think, additionally, I think the court can argue the Butner issue, and I think the court can argue, as before, that, and as the district court argued, that it would make it superfluous 108B, because unlike what the appellant is arguing,
appellant basically wants to only cut out from that particular portion of 108 that which it feels is best for it. What the district court and other courts have said is that if I have a conflict between 108 and 1322, we have to read the two of them in conjunction so that both have meaning. Both only will have meaning in the same issue that they're dealing with, which is a redemption, which is a performance of an act, which is the last part of 108. And in that particular circumstance, what 1322 would be making 108 totally superfluous. Under their particular argument, I can redeem forever. I can redeem after I purchase the property. I can redeem 5 years after the
dissolution. Forever. Hardly. You can redeem only under the control of the bankruptcy court, which is a 3 to 5 year period for a Chapter 13 plan. And in the meantime, Illinois law, if a tax purchaser isn't happy with it, the filing of bankruptcy is one of the things that justifies a petition for a sale in error. You can get your money back when you want it.
That may be, but Your Honor, we're entitled to get the benefit of our bargain and the benefit of what Illinois law lets us have. And the mere fact...
Well, that's the issue. I mean, you can certainly state it as a proposition.
I understand that, Your Honor, but to a certain extent that we are entitled to assert the value of the property, the mere fact that someone else loses out, that is unfortunate as it may be, but that is our right under Illinois law. And as a right under Illinois...
It would have been had there been no bankruptcy filed.
That's correct. And it should not be dependent upon an extended period of time whether or not this particular person files bankruptcy, whether this particular person files a plan, whether that plan is confirmed...
But that's true of all bankruptcy plans. As soon as bankruptcy is filed, all manner of enforcement actions in state courts are frozen and in federal courts, and people can't keep collecting the interest they bargained for. Bankruptcy does change.
My time's over, but all I would say is, and under 108, it only requires me to wait 60 days. At the end of that 60 days, the issue is finished. Either the property is redeemed or not. I don't have to wait for 5 years to see whether or not this debtor has a plan that's proposed. So the plan is confirmed, and the plan is ultimately executed by the debtor actually paying every amount of the plan. So you've taken a period that under every other rule will be 60 days and extending it for 5 years under a cloud. Thank you, Your Honor.
Yes, Your Honor. On the issue of regular income, the statute, the eligibility statute is 109E, and it says there's two parts. One is you have to be an individual with regular income, which is defined pragmatically in Section 10130 as someone who is able to make the payments. And on the date the petition is filed, you have to be under the debt limit, because if you have over that, you should file Chapter 11. And it specifically says, applies the debt limits to the date of filing, but the determination of regular income is not tied to the date of filing. And in this
case...
So
what about 108? What do you have to tell us about 108B?
that if there's a conflict in it, and as I said before, I don't think there is a conflict between 108B and curing or modifying under another chapter. The more specific provision is Section 1322B2, because that applies only to Chapter 13 plans, as opposed to all Chapter 7. It has no effect there. And in this court in Moody versus Amoco Oil said that a Chapter 11 debtor was not limited by 60 days in terms of curing a default on an executory contract, or maybe it was a lease. I think it was an executory contract that this, I think it was a gas station owner, wanted to assume a contract. The 60 days had come and gone, and the other party to the contract said, too late. This court said, Section 365 allows you to assume a contract and cure when you assume, and that to make you do that in 60 days would conflict with the whole scheme of reorganization plans. The other thing is that, and as I said before, I don't think we need 1322C1. But if this court says, like, we just can't figure out which applies, 108B or 1322B2, 1322C1 is incredibly more specific than 108B, and it was enacted later. It was enacted in 1994. 108B has been in the bankruptcy code, the current code, since 1978, and I think it was something like that was there before, so that if there's a conflict, then using the rules of statutory construction, you would use the more specific and later enacted. In this case, there was, well, Your Honor asked the tax purchaser, how were they harmed? And the answer is they were not, and if we look at in this specific case, the debtor made his first payment towards the end of April. He filed his case in March. He's made his payment since then. If the test of regular income is a flexible, pragmatic one, if most of the cases hold, then he has shown that he is a person with regular income. And they have not suffered any prejudice from his doing it this way as opposed to starting out with a 7, converting to 13. I've asked that Your Honor reverse the district court, reinstate the decision of the bankruptcy court. Thank you.
The court would like to thank both Mr. Wachowicz and Mr. Yen for their very fine presentations both today and on your briefs. And the case will be taken under advisement.